Before beginning on the pace line selection that I use, let me say that I've introduced these people by name, so you'll be able to identify them all for purposes of personal correspondence. If you associate yourself and your problems with any particular speaker, well then you can write to him. He'll further share his insights with you. And that's why we have so many speakers, because you're bound to identify with one more than the other. So take advantage of Perko's offer to write to these people and learn further what they're doing to win. It's no secret that I have been reluctant in the past to specify my method of pace line selection. The reason is that some time ago it suddenly came to me as a sort of a subconscious effort how to pick a pace line. The pace line kind of loomed up from the page of the racing form, and I immediately marked it. It was successful. I felt that because it was successful, I didn't want to intellectualize it or verbalize it too much, or it might go away. Those fears have since been allayed. Having verbalized it many times in lectures and in seminars and clinics, it still hasn't gone away, so I think it's safely embedded in my mind, so safely that I can tell you specifically what I do. The second call, regardless of track, regardless of distance, is the most important call in racing. The late Ray Talbot discovered this many years ago. Subsequently, Hugh Matheson, with his own variations, confirmed it, as did Huey Moll, and in more recent times, John Meyer, Dr. Quirin, and other handicappers and writers of note. Thusly, Sarton's law is, key in on the second call. This does not necessarily mean that the horses that are in the lead or the closest at the second call are going to win. That is subject to a particular track. You can identify the value of the second call in relationship to velocity and in lengths behind by merely reading the results charts every morning from your track or tracks. If you find that the winners are coming from less than a length, less than two lengths, more than two lengths, but less than three, or whatever they're coming from, you'll find they'll do it on a relatively consistent basis. So let the second call be your guide as to where a winner should be at that position. I don't think I have to tell you that the second call is the half mile in a sprint. It is the three-quarter mile in a route. As for reading the results charts, I think I should inject something, because even fine handicappers sometimes don't know how to read the results charts. You do not read the results charts the same way you do the past performance charts. In the past performance charts, if it says a horse is fourth, five, that means he is fourth, five lengths behind the leader. In the results charts, if a horse is four, by five, that means he's five lengths ahead of the horse that is fifth. So when using the results charts to determine how far a horse was off the second call leader and subsequently his velocity time at that position, you start with the leader. How many lengths was the horse that was first ahead of the horse that was second? Add that to the number of lengths or portions of lengths that the second horse was ahead of the third ahead of the fourth, until you get to your horse. Remember, do it in reverse the way you do the past performance charts. Otherwise, you're going to distort your evaluation of where a horse has to be at the second call to be a winner at your track. So after doing precisely as Tom Brohammer does, doing an average purse value for every horse in the race, just to find if some horse is sneaking into that race with a lot higher purse value than the others, the next thing I do is to mark the second call velocity of all the horses in question. If they're too far off, I just use fractions. I don't use feet per second. I mark if it's 45 and 2, I just put 45 and 2. If he's two lengths behind, I put 45 and 4. For this purpose, I use the old fifth of a second rule for beaten lengths, because we're not trying to be precise here. We're just trying to find the horses that are closest to where they have to be in order to win at a given track at the second call. When I've narrowed it down to five horses who have the proper position at the second call according to the winning profile at that track, I then take a quick look at the final fraction of each of those horses. If a horse has an exceedingly fast final fraction, not just in one, but in several races, in other words, if that's his behavior pattern, I will add then, in fractions now, remind you, not in feet per second, I'll add the fractional time of the second call with a fractional time of the third fraction. Add the two. Now, of course, when the third fractions are coming from different distances, I do convert them to feet per second in order to get an equalization there. I take the horses that have the five best times, combining those two fractions, and use them as my five. Now, that's the elimination process. We've got our five horses. We know if there's a class standout that's going to alter the pace line, so we'll put him in there too, and may make six selections, sometimes a maximum of even seven that we have chosen for their positive qualities to be contenders in the race. Now, how do I find the proper pace line for those five to seven contenders? Much of what I'm going to say in this regard is covered pretty thoroughly when we'll get into group session here in a few moments. But I think it's worth reiterating that I always, always look first at the last race. Unless there is truly a logical reason for throwing out the last race, you've just got to use it. But logical reasons are numerous. Let me emphasize a few of them. If the race was at a distance that the horse has rarely or never run, or at a distance at which he has run but never run well, I consider that a conditioning race and not an effort, so I'll throw it out. If the race was at a class level, either in purse value or in claiming value, at which a horse has never done well, and he's going down from that level today, I'll throw the last race out. Quite frequently, if the last race was the horse's first race over that track at that meet, I'll throw the race out. Second race over the track is not a myth. It is a very accurate adage. If there was a trouble line in the last race, and that trouble line did indeed impede the horse's progress, I'll throw it out. In any event, I will go through the horse's entire past performance history, in that particular past performance chart, and I will mark each good performance the horse had, where he was finishing either within 3.5 lengths, or first, second, or third, or even fourth. Then I will mark how many bad races he had in between each good effort and see if I can find a pattern. You'll be surprised how many patterns you're going to find. You'll find a win or a close-up second or third, and then two bad races, and then another good race, and then two, maybe three bad races, and another good race. By tracing this, you'll find that the horse, his condition cycle is such that he has two bad races, or 2.5, or 3, or whatever, on an average, between each good race. If, in accordance with that cycle pattern, I envision the next race to be his up cycle, where he will do well, then I will go back to his last good race. But I want to make very certain that that horse does demonstrate a noticeable, calculatable, countable cycle before I do that. I will also note the second call velocity time of the pace of the race and or races at which the horse did its best. Let us say that he runs best against a 45-4 second call in a sprint. He never runs very well against a 44-4 or even a 45 or 45-1, but always does well when the pace of the race is a little slower. I look at today's matchups, and if I see a second call horse or two or three who are running much faster than this horse, then I will throw this horse out unless all three of the faster horses at the second call have a noticeable drop-off in velocity at the third fraction, which this horse traditionally can overcome. Then I'll leave him in. Bear in mind always that it's not just what a horse can do in terms of velocity. It's the matchup. It's the competition he's facing today. And, of course, the quickest way, if you own a computer, or even if you don't, is to put down the pace of the race and under which you put the pace of the horse. Measure his capacity at each call against the pace of the race. Now project today's pace of the race at the second call and the final fraction, and indeed at the first fraction, because if he never can win against a 60 feet per second first fraction, it's very unlikely he'll win today against a 60 foot per second first fraction if there's a race today that traditionally run at that velocity. Now, we have a growing list of trainers who subscribe to the methodology, and they, in theory, utilize this method for entering their horses. But they tell me that there's a big problem. The condition book comes out late, that there are lots of last-minute scratches and changes, so that they don't truly know the exact matchup their horse will be facing today. They kind of guesstimate it by knowing who fits the conditions of the race, but they don't know the specific contenders. These trainers maintain that you and I have a bigger edge in this regard, and that we can withdraw one of our horses from contention if the matchup exceeds his capacity to run. So use the trainer concept of matchups. What can your horse win against? What cannot this particular horse win against? If I see him go into a velocity matchup, which is dominated by where he is at the second call in relationship to the other horses, then I'll throw out the horse because he doesn't belong in that group. Under the conditions of a different matchup, he may win in a breeze. The matchups were related to the three fractional calls that we use, the first fraction, the second call, and the third fraction, and in a sprint, the second fraction. If a horse starts losing his early speed at the second fraction, does not sustain it to the second call, then you might say that that horse is not truly an early speed horse. But if he maintains it to the second call, and I'm not too concerned that he showed a bad fraction at the third fraction unless he always drops off at the third fraction. Beware of a horse that maintains its early velocity through the second call. The most important thing is the competition that any given contender faces today. If he traditionally cannot run a 52 final fraction, and there are a couple of horses who do consistently run a 52, he's not likely to be able to stay with them if they're close to his velocity at the second call. Contrarywise, if he never seems to win against the 60 first fraction, and you have several 60s in the race today, he is not a contender unless those horses with the early speed traditionally drop off to a degree that his traditional closing fraction can overcome the difference between the first fraction difference. So just measure it on the pace of the horse, pace of the race program, and you'll know precisely whether that horse belongs with the contention he is facing today. Now, we said to use the last race unless there is a real valid excuse for not using it. If you go to the second race back and you find an equally valid excuse, you can go back to the third. It takes an awfully valid excuse to go back farther than three races. One of those would be, however, if a horse tried three routes and got nowhere and now is going back to a sprint, and the sprint was four races back, then you can use it, providing class factors are representative and other factors are representative. Contrary wise, if he's been tried as a sprinter three straight times and has failed and shows no talent or capacity for sprinting, and they're putting him back into a route today, then you can use his last route race, even though it was more than three races back. These are exceptions to the rule of only going back the most three races. And don't go back unless it's a valid excuse. Let me tell you something that many, many clients do, which causes them to lose. They fall in love with a horse. Either that or they look in the paper and they see that some horse is selected by almost every public selector, and they subconsciously or perhaps even consciously take an exceptionally good pace line for this horse that they, to use the racing parlance, like, and then won't use the same barometer to judge the other horses. They'll take the other horses for a mediocre pace line and take a good pace line for this horse that they want to win. Well, consequently, he's going to come out looking like a world beater. And when he doesn't win, they forget it was their prejudice in selecting the pace line that caused him to lose, and not the methodology itself. So don't let any prejudices or any leanings of passion toward an individual horse have any effect in your selection of a pace line. That's not the same as knowing a horse. That's not the same as knowing its cycle, knowing when it's ready to perform, even though its last race made it look like it was not ready to perform. If you have run a horse through the pace form class, you know its cycle, you know what it does well against, and you like it for that reason, that's an entirely different concept than having a sort of a love affair with a horse. As you get to know these horses and know their cycle, know their training cycle and their condition cycle, you'll be able to spot when a horse is being put into a race that he can win, even off a dismal last performance. It's a lot of extra work to build a stable of horses and to run a past performance line on each one in the racing form, but it will pay off because you'll know precisely what kind of a pace that horse can and cannot win against. And you'll know precisely when a horse is properly placed. You'll know his form cycle. You'll know that if he had two bad races, that he's due for a good one, if that's his cycle. Or you'll know that he has to have two more bad ones before he's good for a good one, if that's his cycle. But you will know the cycle of a horse even better than its trainer. And furthermore, unlike the trainer, you'll know the precise matchup he's facing today. I want to repeat that trainers do not know this. My trainers tell me that 99% of the so-called trainer maneuvers and racing angles they read in the popular turf magazines, they've never heard of. But bear that in mind. You know, through reading the racing form, more than the trainer knew when he had to enter that horse in today's race, because you have more information. You have it after the fact. He had to get it from the condition book, which comes out late frequently and is incomplete at best. Now, before moving on, let me call your attention to several things in the manual which are being revised and rewritten and supplemented. Some of you already have the supplements. The first thing that comes to mind is when we talked about the track variant in the manual. That was designed for people who only wanted to win 63%. When we first entered into this venture, our goal was to bring everybody up to 63%. That seemed pretty good to a lot of people. We said we'd stay with you and follow through with you until you reach that level, which we have done. But something we did not envision at the time, people want to exceed 63%. They want to go to that golden goal of 80%. You can get 63% by following the instructions in the manual regarding daily variant but you'll never get much more than 63%. There, subsequently, if you wish to do better than 63%, follow not those instructions in the current manual, which is under revision right now, but follow the instructions for making variants in the supplement. Also, distance changes, the feet per second half furlong adjustments are all being altered by track, and you can do them yourselves. You find that the subtle differences here are quite noticeable at certain tracks, and if you pay attention to them, you can win far more than 63%. As an example, horses actually run the 6.5 and 7 furlong times at Santa Anita and Hollywood Park faster than they do 6 furlongs. So rather than giving a horse going from 6.5 to 6 a positive adjustment, and the horse going from 6 to 6.5 a negative adjustment, we've determined at this particular track, or these two particular tracks, there's no adjustment necessary whatsoever. It's also true at Sportsman's. We're investigating every other track in the country, and we'll report to you on this phenomenon. The same may exist between the different route distances. We'll report to you on that. The sprint to route distances adjustments are still measurably accurate. Also in the manual, we talk about averaging. We said it was a dangerous experiment, a dangerous adventure, but properly done, averaging could be beneficial. We find that the negatives of averaging several pace lines overwhelm the positives. You can average in high-class allowance and stakes races, but it can be very, very detrimental if you do it as a practice in claiming races and lower allowance races. Consequently, I wish we'd never put in the capacity to average, and I suggest you not do it. Concentrate on picking the proper pace line, the one that's most reflective of what a horse will do today, and it's far, far more successful than trying to average several races. And that's with the possible exception of very high-priced allowance races and stakes races.